In the Atelier is an offshoot of the award-winning literary publishing house Atelier 26 Books, which brings you brilliantly unconventional novels, short story collections, poetry, and a bit of nonfiction from contemporary authors. Check out our titles and order any at a discount at atelier26books.com. Hi, this is M. Allen Cunningham. I'm an author, publisher, and teacher in Portland, Oregon, and you're in the Atelier. In the Atelier is a place for occasional thoughts on literature, writing, the life of the imagination. Come on in. I'm glad you're here. Today's installment, an Atelier visit with writer Kristen Miaris Young.
Hi, my name is Kristen Miaris Young. Today, I'm going to bring you into my office where I'm standing at my workstation, which is what I call a desk, primarily because I cannot sit at a desk. After so many years being a writer and a journalist, sitting was killing me, quite literally killing me. So I stand. So how do I convey this place to you since you cannot see it? I suppose I'll start with the fabric that covers this workstation, which I will not call a desk. It is made out of palm fronds, but they've been pounded, not just the fronds, but the bark of the trunk has been pounded into soft strips of fabric that are woven together into one piece, and then onto that piece are sewn other slight variations of the color, which is kind of an ochre color, in beautiful shapes and designs. And this came from Kinshasa. It's a good reminder to me that the craft of literature, that any craft, takes its time, and that it is also okay to show your work. This thing that we do requires us to both hide the work that we've done through revision. We polish and shape what we have made, and also to show it. And I've done that in Subduction by giving a meta-awareness to the main characters about the fraught history of contact that they are reenacting in their lives. It takes place in Nia Bay, the northwest tip of the lower 48 Macaw territory, and between an anthropologist and a Macaw man who are both in their 40s and in a space of midlife disconnection, having come to this remote place in order to try to remake themselves and find community. So in Subduction, I ended up showing my work by making the book about the concerns that it raises. And in the case of my personal essays, the way I show my work is through narrative asides, digressions that are anything but. And for that, this piece of fabric is extremely handy because I can see the places where its maker rewove places that had come loose, where that person, I don't know if it was a man or a woman who made this. I would presume it was a woman because of the ways that weaving has often been women's work across cultures. But I do not know. And then, you know, the thing about having this, you know, absolute beauty covering my workstation is that it's been doing that for about 10, maybe even, yeah, I think about 10 years now. And it requires that I never spill coffee on it ever. So I have all these coasters on top of it, which keep my coffee circles away from its grandeur. And on top of it, I have a little tower that I put my laptop on top of so that I don't have a crook in my neck as I stare at the screen. And most importantly, on the little table where I put my laptop. I have a collection of rocks and feathers and crystals and little tchotchkes that people have given me over the years or that I have collected myself. Geodes. Here I have a little woven basket that was given to me at a potlatch with a copper coin inside of it. Which goes back to something that the macaw chiefs would do back in the day when junks would be set adrift from the Orient with a snapped mast, and other also European settler ships would come ashore, and the metal that they had would be heated and made into very, very thin, large sheets that would then be given away to signify to whoever received them that they owed a very great debt to the person who had given it to them. The copper was a recognition of a relationality with a macaw chief, but it also implied that that chief could call upon you at a certain moment. And if you were called upon, you might have to give something of very real value. So I was very honored to receive this copper at a potlatch held by Melissa Peterson's family. And in it, there are some, aside from the copper, there's some dollars that are also given to witnesses to the songs and dances that are performed there to kind of create a living memory of the map, the social map that that song is in terms of revealing a direct lineage to a hereditary chief. I have also these little piece of beach glass. One of them was given me by Luis Alberto Urrea, who actually wrote a blurb for Subduction. Thank you, Luis. Been incredibly important to me as a mentor and a writing friend. And I was in a workshop with him where I actually first began to teach the personal essay. And at one point, he and his wife, Cindy, had gone out to the beach and they collected all this beach glass and they passed it around and we each got to keep one. And at the time, you know, I had been taking these workshops within academic environments. And believe me, no one in those environments was bringing anything to the table except for critique. And so to have received this beach glass made me wonder, like, is this a rigorous place? And it was really Luis who taught me how rigorous it is to bring emotion into personal essays, how rigorous it is and needed it is to recognize and make space for emotion within creative writing workshops and for, you know, just generosity. So I'm grateful to him for that lesson and for this little piece of glass, which is right next to some mica. Mica that is one of my favorite soft, peeling, shiny rocks. And a good example of the kind of porousness that can be in a very solid structure. I love that you can peel rock. Me feel like, okay, if you can peel rock, then that means that it is possible to write this novel. I'm working on my next book, Great Mother. Because of that book, I have a bunch of books about that are related to it. One of them is this book, Sweet Bitter Love, which is the poetry of Sappho, the greatest lyric poet of antiquity. And I've been studying her work in the context of its time. It survived many burnings as papyrus strips and other, I don't know, just relics that were found in the deserts of North Africa. Wherever it had survived, it was kind of brought together, and many, many scholars have tried to piece together the words and phrases. There are not that many, you know, extant poems of hers that are all together, but what lines do remain are extremely impressive. And, you know, you can't really get it in English, unfortunately. I mean, she was writing in Greek, and so, you know, her language, her wordplay, her sonic awareness is something that translators can only hint at. But that's always the case, right? Even when we're trying to translate from thought to page. It is very difficult to capture the movement of thought, but we can try. Also related to that next book, Great Mother, I've had this amazing book called Ecstasy in Secular and Religious Experiences, and it's a compendium by Margarita Lasky, published in the 60s actually, but of all of these literary and biblical examples of ecstasy, and she finds among them continuity of language references, which seem to indicate that there is a feeling that is known as ecstasy, and that it comes at, in various contexts, whether through divine intervention or literary revelation or other kinds of artistic experiences or within nature. There are other kind of biological in the body experiences like childbirth. I believe me, I was not in an ecstatic state while giving birth, but maybe perhaps shortly thereafter. There's also sex. That seems a lot more likely to me. And I've been studying this because this book is based in a mother goddess worshiping cult that is reliant on ecstasy as a means of divine connection. I am seeing very many pairs of eyes looking at me, and that's because I have various tiles of Frida Kahlo, whose portraits regard me throughout the day. Here she is surrounded with four parrots, smoking a cigarette. Various curators have said that she put in these small animals in many of her self-portraits as symbols of the children that she was not able to have due to the intense bodily damage she sustained in that streetcar incident in her youth. And they're a good reminder to me, alongside a little literary hub bag with Joan Didion on it, also smoking a cigarette, also looking at me. But I happen to know that this photo of Joan Didion was taken out of context in a larger photo that included her husband and daughter, who both predeceased her. And so these women who have a merciless gaze, which is rather alike between them, actually, are both also lamenting aspects of their lives, which they code into their literature. And that is helpful, as my next book is a hybrid of, you know, this historical fiction and this ancient mother goddess worshiping cult, and then me moving through time in diaspora by investigating the archaeological signs of this cult. There's quite a few other books in here. Let's see, I got Girlhood by Melissa Phoebos that's coming out in March. It's going to be fantastic. I'm really excited for everyone else to read this book. I have White Magic by Alyssa Washuta. That's also coming out from Tin House in April, and she, you know, investigates the repeated traumas of finding love within the settler colonial state. James Baldwin's essays, which I come back to again and again. And, you know, there's just all these stacks of books that I get lucky enough to come into my life, a little volumes 3 and 5 of Moss, where my work has appeared, and which often feel like to me a great connector to other Pacific Northwest writers. And here I have this kind of wind chime that my mother ordered from a mail order catalog when I was a child. And when I was a writing mentor at Hugo House, if someone was feeling kind of in a bad way because of their work or because of the nature of what they were writing about, I would hold this upside down. All these little balls come cascading out of it, and then like hold on to a magnetized strip, and then bit by bit kind of drop down onto this chime. And it always made people kind of relax and laugh and open up. And so I'm going to conclude with it here. I hope it's not too noisy. Thanks for being with me. This is the sound of my childhood. One of them anyways. So thank you so much to you, Mark, for inviting me to record this visit, and you're welcome back anytime. Bye.
Kristen Miaris Young. She's the author of the novel Subduction, published by Red Hen Press. The book was named a finalist for two International Latino Book Awards in 2020. Visit KristenMYoung.com. In the Atelier is produced by Atelier 26 Books. For more information, visit Atelier26Books.com. I'm M. Allen Cunningham. Thanks for listening. So long for now.